From theunts.com, this is the Unts Podcast. Featuring artist interviews, unreleased tracks, and previews of the biggest events in electronic music. Available every week at theunts.com. Hello and welcome to the Unts Podcast. I'm your host, Anand Harsh. My guest today is the one and only Wolfgang Gartner. I'm not going to lie, this was one of my all-time favorite interviews. Joe Youngman is a total pro. He's been in the DJ game for more than a decade, and his electro house creations always hit the top of the Beatport charts without fail. He's worked with the Dipset's Jim Jones, Eve, Will.i.am, Tiesto. He's been nominated for a Grammy. He's released huge hits like Ilmerica and Latin Fever, played giant festivals all over the world. I mean, this guy is one of the best. And he shoots from the hip, which I appreciate. He's got a retrospective coming out on September 4th on Ultra Music, and at the end of September, he'll be kicking off his 30-plus date, 5-week Love and War US tour. Today's show is brought to you by Silver Rapper and React Presents, bringing you the third installment of the North Coast Music Festival, August 31st through September 2nd in Chicago's Union Park. Wolfgang Gartner was actually on the bill last year. This year's headliners include Pretty Lights, Girl Talk, STS9, Axwell, Steve Angelo, and huge after parties featuring Dr. P, Iotto, Paul Oakenfold, Elliot Lip, and many more. Tickets still available online at NorthCoastFestival.com. On September 4th, Ultra is putting out Backstory. It's a 13-track retrospective of some of your biggest hits. Now, these were all produced between 2008 and 2010. And I wonder, in an industry that's always in flux, where trends are being born every 15 minutes, it seems, what's the impetus for reaching back into your catalog for a release?
There's multiple reasons for it, to be honest. I mean, one of them is that I constantly, you know, for the fans constantly want to hear old stuff. It's like if you go to a Rolling Stones concert, if you go to like the Doors concert, you don't want to hear their new album. Most
you really don't.
Most of the fans want to hear the hits. And like my fans, you know, it's different in dance music. They want to hear the new stuff. They want to hear the unreleased stuff, but there's a huge portion of them that want to hear the old stuff because they like it or because it still resonates with them. Now, for me personally, most of my old stuff between 2008 and 2010 or so sounds very dated to me and kind of makes me cringe when I listen to it, with the exception of maybe like 3 tracks on that compilation. I think like Firepower, I'm still proud of that one. Like Latin Fever, there's a couple on there that I'm still like, that don't make me cringe. But like Wolfgang's Fifth Symphony is like, obviously that was like the biggest hit in that time period, and that's the one that people still request. But I can't even play that anymore, like just for my own personal integrity. Like people want to hear me play that, but I can't do it. I can't bring myself to do it. So part of it, it's mainly for the fans and for people that have become aware of me, because my reach and my fan base has grown a lot within the past year or so. So there's this whole group of people that don't know about what I did before that. Mm-hmm. So it's just kind of, you know, a lot of people will get appreciation out of this. It was Ultra's idea to do this because they, you know, when they signed me to the deal, they bought all my old music. They bought Kindergarten, basically, without the name, but they just bought all the old tracks that I released on it. So they own all these songs, and they're like, we want to do something with it. And, you know, it makes sense. People are going to buy it, and it was their idea. And technically, I mean, I went along with it because it makes sense for the fans, and it makes sense for people that want to hear the older stuff. But for me personally, it's like, you know, if I was released to my own music, I would probably not even do this, because I'm not proud of that stuff. I'm proud of what I'm doing right now, and I'm proud of like the stuff that I have coming up, and I don't want to I don't want to shed light on like old stuff that I made, because I've made leaps and bounds in production value and just ingenuity and like originality since then. But you know, Ultra is the label that I'm on, and they're running a business, and they're choosing what to put out, and it will probably do good overall. So it's just kind of their thing, really, not mine, to be honest.
Okay. Well, then let's talk about the new stuff. Tell me about Casual Encounters, Casual Encounters of the Third Kind, your latest EP that contains smash hits Girl on Girl and Girl on Boy. Tell me then, how do you chart your own musical evolution from maybe those cuts on Backstory through these new ones? Is it difficult for you to point to any one thing and say, I'm doing this differently, or I've been listening to salsa and polka all day, so that track sounds like this? I guess you kind of touched on production quality a little bit.
Yeah, there's a few things. While I'm thinking about it, what you just said, like I've been listening to salsa and polka lately, I think a big difference is between 2008 and 2010, when I was really like building my name, I was listening to a lot of dance music. Like I listened to dance music in my car. I listened to everything that was coming out on Beatport. Like I was really immersed in it. So I was being influenced heavily by all the other dance music that was out there. And now I don't listen to dance music at all. The only time I listen to it is like if I have to shop for it on Beatport. But otherwise, I listen to rap. I listen to Top 40. I listen to pop radio. Like I listen to oldies. Like I don't listen to dance music, partially because I'm so, you know, immersed in it all the time that it would just be overkill to listen to it anymore in my free time. And also partially because I realized that I was being influenced consciously and subconsciously by what I was listening to, and those influences showed in my music and people were identifying them. I was like, I don't want to be influenced by other dance producers or other electronic music producers for people to be able to identify like a sound that sounds like something else in my music. So after like 2010, 2011, I stopped listening to dance music partially for that reason, because I don't want it to seep into my head and to like unconsciously while I'm working on something make a sound that sounds like, you know, producer X. So that's one of the things that changed. And it took me, you know, years to sort of develop my own sound just through trial and error. So that was also a factor in it, is just the development of my signature sound over 2 years. Another factor is the production quality. Like I've learned a lot and grown a lot as a, not dance music producer, but just as a producer in general. As far as the quality of the music, the mix downs, the way it sounds in a club, the way it sounds in a car, the overall quality, mastering, engineering, that whole aspect of the music is an area that I've really grown in. And to me, that's something that I'm really proud of. And also when I listen back on this stuff from 2008-2010, like Backstory, some of it is mixed, in my opinion, mixed and mastered really poorly. And I wanted to remaster all of those songs, but I just don't have time to do it. So we're putting it out as is. But when I listen back to these things, that's one of the things that makes me cringe. It's like, man, my mix down on this is horrible. Like, it's muddy. I was working on really, you know, the speakers I was working on then were $1,000 compared to the ones I'm working on now. They're $10,000. You know, like what I was working on then compared to what I'm doing now is so different. My capabilities were limited. My knowledge was limited. My experience was limited. So those are just a few of the things that have changed. But, you know, being influenced by other dance music versus not listening to it at all, developing my signature sound, the learning and growing as far as engineering and mixing and mastering and all that stuff, and the gigs that I've played. I mean, obviously in 2008 I was playing tiny little warehouse parties and raves and like just tiny ass little venues for small crowds most of the time, and in the past 2-3 years it's gotten to the point where like every show I play is sold out or close to it, and I'm playing massive festivals. I'm playing to 10,000 people or 15,000 people. I mean, there was a run this past month where I think 7 shows in a row were all over 10,000 people, and I was, you know, playing second to last on main stage. And that has an impact on my music. You know, the gigs that I play are fuel for the music that I make. So like when I was playing in 2008 to 100 people, the music that I made was being influenced by these gigs that I was playing. And now I'm playing for 10,000 people in these giant venues, and these amazing, amazing shows. And my music is being influenced by that, and it improves my music. You know, the quality of shows that I play have a direct impact on the quality of music that I make. And the better the shows get, the better the music gets, I feel like.
Deadmau5 and Wolfgang Gartner with Animal Rights.
I wonder, as you're talking about personal growth, I can't help but thinking being a DJ is such a lone wolf type of lifestyle. Does that complicate your collaborations? I know you've worked with Deadmau5 and Skrillex, among others, and I'm sure it can get real hairy real quick if everyone doesn't put their egos aside and sacrifice pure artistic vision for the joy of pinging and ponging fresh ideas back and forth.
That's true, and the only collaborations I've ever done were with, like you said, it's Skrillex, Deadmau5, Tiësto, and I guess Mark Knight a few years ago. And the only one I've ever done in person was with Deadmau5, and the Mark Knight thing we did at my studio as well. But with Skrillex and Tiësto, it was all over the internet. And with guys like that, when you're at that level of production, and when there's a mutual respect, which there was with me and Sonny and Joel and the other people that I worked with, when there's a mutual respect, ego is set aside, and there were no issues like that. It was all a very organic process, and I mean, especially the things that I made with Sonny and Deadmau5, who I feel my sound is probably closest to, and their sound is probably closest to mine. We, you know, the parts that Joel wrote to me sounds like something I could have written, and the parts that I wrote sound like something that Joel probably would have written. So it's like, it's a very organic thing, you know. Those collaborations happen organically, and I would never work with anybody where I didn't think that it would happen organically like that, you know.
Sure, sure. And speaking of those big names, I just got word that you're currently in the top 10 in voting for America's Best DJ. Are the accolades important to you still, the IDMAs, the Grammys, or do you feel like it's just a commercial distraction from the music, which is your main focus?
I have completely changed my perspective on all that within the last year. That it is exactly what she said, a commercial distraction from the music, and basically it's a popularity contest. Like, the America's Best DJ, whatever, I've been in the top 10 for the last 2 years, but it doesn't mean shit. It's just a popularity contest, meaning it's not really about how good of a DJ you are. It's about how much exposure you get, how many Facebook fans you have. Like, I didn't post anything on Facebook or Twitter or whatever, like, vote for me and America's Best DJ, but obviously people did. The DJ Mag Top 100 is the absolute worst example of everything, because that is the ultimate popularity contest. You post on your Facebook, vote for me in this competition, and David Guetta has the most Facebook fans out of anybody in dance music, and guess who's number one in DJ Mag Top 100? David Guetta. Is David Guetta the best DJ? I've never seen David Guetta play, so I'm not going to say. I'm not talking shit on him. I'm just saying it's purely a popularity contest. And Deadmau5 isn't even a DJ. He announced this year, like, I don't want you to vote for me in this contest because I'm not a DJ. And people are still going to do it, and he's still going to come in number four. So it's purely just like, who's the most popular? Who has the most fans? It has nothing to do with DJing anymore. And then there are people who cheat in it, and there are promoters, unfortunately, like China is a perfect example. Asia as a whole, but China, like, though basically they don't know really much about what's going on in the inner workings of the industry, so they'll rely strictly on that list for booking people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, festivals will rely on that list for, like, building and stages and everything, and if I came in below somebody else, then they'll put somebody else on a bigger stage, and it's a completely inaccurate barometer of somebody's fan base, of somebody's pull, but people are using it to make these decisions of billing and fees and everything else. And it's a bubble that's got to burst soon. People have got to realize how really messed up this thing is. The Grammys, I mean, I believe Skrillex definitely deserved to win some Grammys and be nominated. And some of the other people did too, but I feel like if you look at the big picture of, aside from Skrillex and aside from maybe a couple other people, if you look at who else got nominated for dance remixes and dance albums, it's kind of messed up when you look at what's really out there. The people that are nominating Grammys based for dance music, the people that are on the Grammy Commission aren't really tuned into dance music. It's also kind of a popularity contest. And it doesn't take anything to get on the Grammy Commission. I have friends from high school who are on the Grammy Commission who just, like, randomly got in it. I didn't even know you could how to get on it. I was talking to them about it one day, and they're like, hey, I'm on the Grammy Commission. I just filled out this form, and, like, I'm suddenly on it. So these are not, like, educated people in the industry. They're random people that are just voting for whatever, you know? And my friend's like, hey, I'm on the commission. I'll make sure and vote for you. I'm like, okay. How many other dudes have friends on the commission that are voting for them?
Exactly.
You know, that's the Grammys, the IDMAs, whatever. I won a bunch of those things one year, but those don't really, I don't know what kind of significance or impact those have on anything. That's another thing where, like, Ultra seems to win something every single year, or their artists do, because they have a lot of pull. I don't know how much political stuff is going on there. There's also the label that I'm on, so I'm not talking shit on Ultra. I'm just saying, like, there's political stuff in all of these things, and they're all very inaccurate barometers of what's really going on. It's basically all just a popularity contest.
Sure. There's a lot to unpack in everything you said there, but something is really sticking with me, the dichotomy of DJ and producer. At this point in your career, you know, obviously you're a very sought after producer and have worked extensively with a lot of mainstream artists, but, you know, you're rooted very heavily in this deep house culture. Do you think of yourself as a DJ? Do you think of yourself as a producer, or are you just a performer? And, you know, these labels and obviously the commercial aspect of it, it's all a bunch of bullshit as far as you're concerned.
I think in 2012, the terms DJ and producer go together. And if you're a producer and you want to make money or travel or have a career, you have to learn how to DJ or put on a show. And if you want to be a DJ, you're going to have to put out a bunch of number ones on Beatport in order to get those gigs. So they go hand in hand nowadays. I learned to DJ before I learned to produce music. I learned to DJ on tape decks with pitch controls when I was 13 years old. So that was what I got into first. And then, I guess I learned to produce when I was 11, and then I got into DJing. But still, it's like, first it was tape decks with pitch controls, then it was turntables and playing in clubs. And then I had, like, a whole career, a DJ career, where it was still vinyl, and I was lugging around, like, giant bags of vinyl to all my shows of CDs, and then it was CDs, and now it's USBs. So I've run the entire gamut of the DJ world, you know? And other guys just, like, they start off, and they start off on Ableton, and that's all they know, and there's nothing wrong with that. That's the new world. These kids using Ableton to DJ is what it's become, and that's fine, and I'm not saying anything that they're doing is invalid, but I learned to DJ on tape decks with fish controls. That's what it comes down to, and that pretty much explains where I'm at as far as, like, how I approach it. You know, it's still an art form to me.
Absolutely.
And producing and DJing still goes hand in hand with me.
Wolfgang Gartner and Skrillex with The Devil's Den. That was followed up by Girl on Boy from Casual Encounters of the Third Kind.
So yeah, the big news from your camp is that you're embarking on the Love and War Tour, a five-week, 30-day adventure through the American heartland. And what I've noticed, and you kind of talked to this a little bit before, after a summer of playing these giant festival stages, you'll be back in those smaller clubs and theaters. And I wonder, does that allow you to stretch your legs a little and get a little deeper, a little bit more intimate for these packed rooms of crazies?
To be honest, I have absolutely no idea why I'm playing these cities I'm playing. They sent me the tour dates and I went, Mississippi, Montana, Idaho, like, what in the world is going on here? And they explained it to me as just like, these are places that I've never played before. Like, I'm constantly playing New York and LA and Miami and Vegas and all the major markets. And these are places that I never played before. So it's just a matter of spreading my sound and bringing this music to places that have not had a chance to hear it before because they're outside of driving distance from places that I play. And some of the venues are smaller because they're the only venues in that area that can, you know, house what we're doing. And another part of the tour is that there are major cities on the tour. There are those big cities that I'm not going to say their names, but, you know, the big major cities in America, but we're not allowed to announce them yet for various reasons. So people keep asking on Facebook and Twitter, why aren't you playing such and such and such and such and such and such? Well, I am playing all those cities, but we're just not allowed to announce them yet for like legal reasons. So I am going to be hitting all the major ones as well, but it's also just a matter of like, you know, there are people in all these cities that want to hear dance music. And as it grows, the demographic all across the heartland and all across, like a lot of these are college towns, it grows. And the people that are coming to these major festivals in New York and in Miami and LA are driving, you know, 500, 1,000 miles from wherever they live in Idaho to come to this festival. And when I come to their city, people are going to come out for it, you know, and I'm putting a lot of money into production. I'm putting a lot of overhead into this tour to just absolutely go apeshit and really like put on a huge show. And I'm hoping that it flips and people from New York City end up driving out to like Vermont to come to one of these shows because this is going to be where they're going to have an opportunity to see it. This is, you know, this is where I'm bringing this crazy rig that we're building is to whatever city in Vermont. So yeah, it's going to be, it's 35 shows in 5 weeks. Major production, obviously the last rig was called Medusa. If you've seen any clips on YouTube or any pictures of it, we're having a completely new one built this time. That's not the same design at all. It's a completely different thing that I think is going to blow it out of the water. Bigger crew, bigger bus, everything is going to be bigger than the last one. So yeah, it should be interesting. It should be an adventure.
And the fans are going to be just over the moon for this.
I think so.
Joey Youngman, Wolfgang Gartner, thank you so much for being on the UNS podcast. It was a delight.
Thanks for having me, man. My pleasure.
Montezuma will wrap up this week's episode with Wolfgang Gartner. You can grab that track and 12 other smash hits from his career in a little retrospective package called Backstory, out September 4th on Ultra Music. The Love and War US Tour kicks off September 27th in Baton Rouge and hits a ton more cities throughout the nation for the following 5 weeks. Full tour dates can be found at theunts.com/Wolfgang Gartner. Don't forget, today's show is brought to you by North Coast Music Festival from React Presents and Silver Rapper, taking place Labor Day weekend in beautiful Union Park in Chicago, Illinois. Headliners include Pretty Lights, Steve Aoki, Knife Party, Excision, Chucky, and there are going to be some absolutely bonkers after shows with STS9, Dr. P, Dan Deacon, Alesso, Claude Von Stroke, Grizzmatic, that's Grizz and Grammatic, and just, it's a really cool lineup, going large for Labor Day. Tickets at northcoastfestival.com. Get those after parties tickets because they're going quick. Please visit theunts.com for news, artist profiles, tour dates, and now tickets to some of the biggest shows across the electronic music spectrum. And go ahead and subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. Write us a review. Tell us what you think of the show. If you have any questions, comments, or complaints about the program, you'd like to be a guest on the UNS podcast, or you'd like to sponsor an episode, contact me at anand@theunce.com. A-N-A-N-D at theunce.com. Join the conversation at The Unce Podcast on Twitter. We'll catch you next week with The Knocks.